last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
MAGA loves it. MAGA loves what I'm doing. MAGA loves everything I do. MAGA is me. MAGA loves everything I do, and I love everything I do too. That's just a quote from Donald Trump's latest press conference this afternoon. 5 years on from the attempted insurrection on Capitol Hill, a day which should be infamous in American history, but yet seems to be overlooked by so many people. We all watched in horror 5 years ago as a mob, encouraged by the inaction at best of the outgoing President Donald Trump, raided Capitol Hill, tried to prevent the certification of the votes of the presidential election, a mob inaction which led to many deaths. Five police officers died as a result of what happened that day. And of course, what Donald Trump has done since is pardon all of those who were involved in that behaviour. Cal Thomas, looking back on that 5 years ago, it seemed to most rational people that that would have been the end of Donald Trump, that he could never have ever been trusted again by the American people. How shameful is it for the Republican leadership that they allowed him to retake control of their party and get back to a position of power?
Well, Matt, you and I know, because we've discussed this before, both Marianne and I condemn that action. I think lawlessness is unforgivable. I was not in favor of a lot of the pardons, but as we've discussed before, the president's pardon power is absolute. Many presidents have used it, in my view, in questionable ways, but that doesn't undo what the Constitution provides. The Democrats want to put up a plaque in the Capitol commemorating that terrible event on January 6, 5 years ago. Republicans are against it. But, you know, this is all politics. And this is not, you know, there have been worse things that happened. In 1954, a bunch of Puerto Rican terrorists shot up Congress, wounding a number of members. There have been other incidents when people have invaded. There was a shooting when Tom DeLay, the former minority leader in the House of Representatives, some people shot and killed in his office. So these, while unusual events, they're not unprecedented. But I agree. I think this was a terrible moment. It was a small amount. Most of the people were peacefully demonstrating. But I think the whole premise that the election was stolen, which Trump continues to say is false.
Well, indeed, your friend Mike Pence, the vice president at the time, was lucky to escape with his life, as were others. But it is noticeable, right, as well, Marianne McKeown, isn't it, that it's been charted that at least 33 of the insurrectionists who were pardoned by Trump have since been rearrested, charged, or sentenced for other crimes.
Yeah, and you know, Mike Pence actually did put out a statement today just reiterating that he was dad to his duty on that day, which was a pretty subtle, I think, dig at Trump, but obviously went largely unnoticed and unheralded. I would disagree with you on your characterization of Trump's inaction on the day. Let's state it for what it was. Trump sicked on a mob. He told them to go fight like hell or they wouldn't have a country anymore, told them to go down to the Capitol, said he'd be going down with them, and he basically sicked them up on the Capitol. We saw Jack.
Sorry, Marianne, I have to stop you a second. I was being careful there because I didn't want a 10 billion euro lawsuit like the BBC is getting.
Too late. Anyway, but so I do think that this is, you know, Jack Smith was back on the record last week. They wouldn't let him speak in public, the Republicans in Congress.
Just remind us who Jack Smith was again. Or is.
Jack Smith was the special counsel who prosecuted, he was putting together an assembly. He was charged with charging Donald Trump with the actions that he took on that day and before it, because it wasn't just January 6th. It was the way that he was trying to really make other people behave fraudulently and criminally as well, to try and overthrow the election in advance of January 6th. That was like the last, that was the icing on the cake, on the very rotten cake, if you will. Trump has been trying to prosecute him and has been persecuting him. He was summoned before Congress by Republicans about a week ago. They wanted a closed hearing. He didn't take the Fifth, unlike most people, and he restated the case that he had set up against Donald Trump, said he had no doubt that he had been convicted. There was evidence beyond any reasonable doubt that he intended to overthrow a lawful election, and he really put it back to the Republicans, and the whole thing ended up being pretty embarrassing for them. So I think, but to get to your question, addressed him out with apologies. Yeah, I mean, these insurrections, you had 1,600 people, five police officers died as a result of January 6th. Four of them committed suicide in the days and weeks afterwards. And another police officer suffered a stroke and died as a result. He was pepper sprayed and beaten on the steps of January 6th, trying to defend the Capitol. So you had almost 1,600 people. Where those cases were individually brought by prosecutors, investigated by the FBI. Juries convicted them or they pleaded guilty. And then Trump just pardoned them all except for 14 whose sentences he commuted. And as you correctly pointed out, several of these people have been, 33 I think, have been rearrested. They were charged. Other crimes ranging from serious assault, child porn.
Sorry, let me tell you something. I've got the list here, Marion, because some of these people actually argued that their pardons should also cover unrelated criminal convictions separate to capital, which is right.
Yeah.
In one case, Trump himself personally explicitly re-pardoned one insurrectionist for unrelated weapons charges. And listen to this, six of those have been charged with committing child sex crimes, ranging from sexual assault to possession of child pornography. At least five have been charged with illegal possession of weapons, including at least two who had a previous domestic violence conviction. Five were arrested or charged when driving while impaired or under the influence. In two of these cases, the defendant's reckless driving resulted in a fatality, and two have been charged with rape. And Cal, I know you say that this is a presidential prerogative, but it doesn't mean it has to be exercised, does it? It's not compulsory to start giving pardons to people who support you or who indulge Trump in the lie that the election in 2020 was stolen from him.
Well, you're quite right, Matt. And of course, these people are responsible for their own personal behavior. But I agree with you. I think trying to pardon unrelated incidents is frankly outrageous. I think that Congress ought to take another look at the constitutional power pardon. I don't think it should be absolute in all cases. Now, how you would limit that or how you would make it fair, I don't know. But it's something that ought to be debated. And several presidents have done this with people who been involved in drugs and other criminal activity that they either were or could have been indicted and convicted for. So I think the whole system is unfair. The president can pardon his contributors or friends. And I think it brings a lot of shame on the government of whoever is leading it.
I wonder how many people will end up getting pardons in relation to the Epstein files, Marion, when they are finally released. Because it's quite extraordinary to see the US Justice Department now admitting there may be as many as 2 million files that have still not been released.
You know, what's really extraordinary about this, and yeah, I think that that's, well, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell may yet be one of the recipients of a pardon. Certainly, it looks like she's on track to be one, given her new soft prison and all the extra conditions she's been giving, and she's been treated like a VIP rather than a really heinous child trafficker. This is extraordinary. This is, the Department of Justice is in breach of the law. It's in breach, like, Congress passed a law that said these files had to be released within 30 days. It turns out about 1% of the files have only been released. There are another 2 million that still haven't been released. It's just an astonishing, this is a lawless government. And I don't say that with any sort of, it sounds hyperbolic, I know, but they international domestic laws, they flout them all. I mean, you have the Supreme Court, people up and down to the Supreme Court every day, you know, troops on the street violating the Constitution, the tariffs. It just doesn't seem to matter. Trump really seems to believe that he is certainly immune, and I think unfortunately he's right, from the reach of any international laws, and that he can just do whatever the heck he wants overseas. But it also, as partly as a result of the Supreme Court's appalling ruling last year that conferred unlimited presidential immunity for criminal acts committed while in office, Trump just seems to think that he can do whatever he wants without any constraint, and really shamelessness is his superpower, because a sense of decorum and discipline and just respect for the office before, I think, constrained other presidents, maybe apart from Nixon. But he really just does not seem to care. And he's now out at his retreat with the Republicans, and he's boasting all about the great rendition of Maduro and moaning that Democrats aren't praising him, despite the fact that it does violate international law and also the US Constitution, because it did ratify the UN Charter.
You just mentioned shamelessness being his superpower. His Deputy Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller, who is an exceptionally influential aide to Trump, gave an extraordinary interview with Jake Tapper on CNN last night. And this is what he had to say about the US being a superpower, which will continue to act like one.
The United States is using its military to secure our interests unapologetically in our hemisphere. We're a superpower, and under President Trump, we are going to conduct ourselves as a superpower. It is absurd that we would allow a nation in our own backyard to become the supplier of resources to our adversaries, but not to us, to hoard weapons from our adversaries, to be able to be positioned as an asset against the United States rather than on behalf of the United States.
Sovereign countries shouldn't be able to do what they want to do.
The future of the free world, Jake, depends on America being able to assert ourselves and our interests without apology. This whole period that happened after World War II, where the West began apologizing and groveling and begging
I don't even know what you're talking about right now. What I'm talking about, Jake,
is the idea. And you, by the way, you do. I know you love doing that smarmy thing, Jake, and I was hoping to be better than that this time. The reason why I was giving you that speech, which I know you didn't want to hear, is because you're approaching this from the wrong frame. This neoliberal frame that the United States' job is to go around the world and demanding immediate elections be held everywhere, immediately, all the time, right away, to create these vacuums.
That's not what I think, but you invaded the country. We went into the country and we seized the leader of Venezuela.
Damn straight we did.
And I'm saying,
we're not going to let Tim Pot communist dictators send rapists into our country, send drugs into our country, send weapons into our country.
Okay.
And we're not going to let a country fall into the hands of our adversaries.
Okay, Cal, I thought that the military operation was to arrest Maduro so he could face charges on drug dealing. From listening to Miller there, he's given the game away, hasn't he? It was just simply about regime change and getting control of Venezuela.
Well, Matt, there are many problems and many other countries, our adversaries involved in our hemisphere, from Iran to China and Russia, all of which have had presences in Central and South America, some of them for quite some time, going back to the Reagan administration and even before. Their goal has been to undermine the United States and its interests. I wouldn't go as far as Stephen Miller did, but I do think that when it comes to Cuba, for example, which has got to be very nervous now after the action in Venezuela, and some of these other countries, many of which are now starting to move to a democracy, I think they should be worried. And while the United States cannot be the policeman of the world, it can be the policeman of its own backyard.
Do you think it's entitled to act as a superpower in its own region, do you?
Yeah, up to a point, yes, I do. I think that when you have other nations, terrorist nations, communist nations, nations that are enemies of the United States, infiltrating our hemisphere, helping to provide drugs to get into our country and killing thousands upon thousands of Americans, and in the case of Iran, wanting world domination under Sharia law, which is what they say, then I think we have a right to fight back, and our own survivability is at stake.
What do you say to that, Marion?
Such thing as international law. Excuse me?
Sorry, just asking Marion for her opinion on that.
Okay, just picking up from what Cal said there. I mean, there is international law, Cal, and the UN Charter. The US was a signatory, and as we said, I think it was yesterday,
that's
the
not world order.
But it's a treaty that the US has ratified, and the US Constitution says that ratified treaties get the highest order in terms of primacy of laws. So I think it is something that the US has considered itself, at least, to be in some way bound by, even though it has violated it before. The world has relied on America to uphold the world order, and I find it staggering that Stephen Miller, whose family were run out of Russia or the Ukraine area, I think, in a pogrom, and you know, he came from a family of Jewish refugees. If what he is advocating today were allowed to happen again, I mean, there would be no stopping the slaughter of Jews in Europe. There would be no stopping Germany from overrunning small countries and persecuting its populations. I mean, is this really the kind of world he wants to go back to, a pre-World War II world with all of the consequences that it had for tens of millions of people, but the Jewish population in particular? I mean, it's just what he says. And you know, I think with Jabe Tapper called it correctly, I don't think he had any idea of what he was even suggesting there and then, because he's just so filled with this weird bile and rage and an inflated sense of his own importance. But I think America has to go back to some kind of responsible policing. And, you know, nobody's going to shed any tears for Maduro. I think that had the US said, OK, we're taking him out, now we're going to have an election reheld within the next 6 weeks, and we will have these people who, you know, there's a Nobel Peace Prize winner whose colleague won the last election in 2024, and Maduro just held on to power. So, you know, there are ways that these people have credibility. The people in Venezuela would welcome them. I'm pretty sure they'd be pretty friendly to America. So Trump doesn't have to go this route. I mean, it's just not necessary.
Okay, let's hear a little bit more of Miller. And this is when he was talking to Jake Tapper about the possibility of a military invasion of Greenland.
The president has been clear for months now that the United States should be the nation that has Greenland as part of our overall security apparatus.
The United States, but your wife posted that like hours after the Venezuela operation.
But that's
why it's newly relevant.
I'll talk with you about it for an hour. I think it's a really important conversation. I just wanted to reset Jake by making clear that it has been the formal position of the U.S. government since the beginning of this administration, frankly, going back into the previous Trump administration, that Greenland should be part of the United States. The president has been very clear about that. That is the formal position of the U.S. government.
Right, but can you say that military action against Greenland is off the table?
It wouldn't be military action against Greenland. The Greenland has a population of 30,000 people, Jake. The real question is, by what right does Denmark assert control over Greenland? What is the basis of their territorial claim? What is their basis of having Greenland as a colony of Denmark? The United States is the power of NATO. The United States should have Greenland as part of the United States. There's no need to even think or talk about this in the context that you're asking of a military operation. Nobody's going to fight the United States militarily over the future of Greenland.
He may well be right about that, and that Europe might be powerless to prevent it. But Cal, you can hardly describe Denmark or Greenland as a communist state which is trying to flood drugs and guns into the United States. So is it suddenly legitimate now for the United States because it wants, or its administration wants, Greenland, and it can simply just take it, tear up history, tear up legal treaties?
No, as you mentioned yesterday, Matt, that we have a small base there. I think if we want to challenge China, which has got submarines and ships in ports in Greenland, then we can just up our military presence there. There's no right to grab Greenland as what, the 51st state? Or if you were President Obama, that would be the 53rd state, because he said there were 52 of them. But no, I think he's off base on that. And as a NATO member, I think Denmark has certain rights about this. And I, frankly, I'm on their side about it.
Last word on this, Marion. Is it looking, despite the desperation of EU leaders and Britain and Canada and various others, that it's becoming almost inevitable that because Donald Trump wants to add to his territory, that America will simply take Greenland, knowing that nobody will be able to do anything about it?
Yeah, I think we should listen closely to Stephen Miller. because who is going to stop America? But I think that more than Greenland, which actually has a population of, I think, 52 or 58,000, not 30,000, but it's moot. That's not, there's not going to be an uprising against American forces. And there will be no need. They will take it without a shot being fired, I suspect, if they want to do so. But as the Danish Prime Minister said, it will mark the end of NATO. Both Denmark's a founding NATO member, and as is the US. You know, so if you have one of these turning on the other, and, you know, I suspect that might be something that Donald Trump is perfectly well aware of and doesn't mind at all. But I think there's also another angle there. He and his crypto buddies, Peter Thiel and the like, have long spoken about setting up crypto states, and they've been pushing him on Greenland as well, because they see it as somewhere they could plant their crypto flag and their broligarch flag. So I think there are a number of factors at play here, and I think that Denmark and the EU should be very, very worried. But I think there are ways. America has a low tolerance for pain, a low threshold for pain, and I think something like that, that the EU would have to bite the bullet and just do a full economic services and goods embargo on the US and make it pay and boycott all of the US celebrations in its 250 years, including World Cup, including everything, that America would really have to be made to feel the disapproval of the rest of the world if they do this. But does Europe have the guts or the tenacity? I don't know.
Thank you very much, Marion McKeown and Carl Thomas.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.